Hey, I'm Derek.
And I'm Noah, and you're listening to A Bite Of,
where we take our current favorite pop culture obsession and enjoy it one nibble at a time.
One nibble. Four nibbles of Percy Jackson.
Halfway through the pie of Percy Jackson.
Oh my God, halfway through. We still have
That's four more, right?
Yeah, we still have four more. That's insane. Well, I hope you've been enjoying this as much as we have. I feel like our last couple months have just been Percy Jackson because we did a bunch of like all that press and we've seen it before everybody else. So it's just like nothing but Percy Jackson.
And you know what? I think it's a fantastic world to live in. Mm. It's heroes you can believe in, gods that you question, and villains that are just delightfully evil.
It's the real world, pretty much.
Most of our villains aren't delightfully evil, though.
That's very true. I mean, talk about current favorite obsession. Like, I feel like I'm just obsessed with it.
Well, yeah, you've really gone into the deep end.
Oh, yeah. I'm just like, I couldn't stop rereading the books.
He's rereading all of the books now.
So, okay. I just want to put this out there because I know especially people on YouTube, because we do put these up on YouTube so you can watch our faces talk and listen at the same time.
We both have beards.
Yeah. Surprise. But so a lot of people are like, I can't wait until your next thoughts in the next book. So what we're going to do is when the next season is announced and it comes out, before that we'll do the book. So sorry to make you wait, but I couldn't wait to reread them, so I'm like almost done already.
You know who should apologize?
Who
is Disney Plus? Yeah. For making everyone wait.
Yeah, I mean, they still haven't announced the season 2. I'm sure we're gonna get it.
That's cuckoo crazy bananas.
Yeah. Speaking of more Percy Jackson stuff, so on Patreon we recently released a kind of like hangout. It's just like a hangout with us, but we do the cabin quiz that Disney put out. And I really am okay. I'm starting to like be fine with my cabin.
So, I think you should be.
Yeah.
You have no choice.
Yeah.
Myself, on the other hand, I still feel like my results are inconclusive.
Yeah. I mean, to find out what they are, just, you know, join Patreon, support the show. You can find out what our cabins were and the journey for us to get them.
What our quest will be still is remaining.
But make sure you are subscribed and following the podcast, because after this week, so we're recording this before this episode drops because we are able to see it early. This is the last time we get to see it early. So to get alerts when we actually have to watch it when it comes out and release the episodes, just make sure you're subscribed. And then also just do a little rating. We're still on our way to 200 reviews. So that'd be great if 2024, we could finally reach that goal. We always forget to ask. I feel like we've been doing good and asking, and it's been working. So, you know,
I almost feel like if we ever talk to anybody about our podcast, we always should say, by the way, we're looking to get 200.
No, just steal their phone and just do it.
That's like, actually easier.
Let me do it for you. Just
can I see your phone for a second? I know.
All right. So getting into the episode, spoilers ahead, anything from the last couple episodes and the Percy Jackson book itself, it could be spoiled, so tread lightly.
Yes, so let us officially take a bite of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, Episode 4, I Plunge to My Death. In this episode, directed by Anders Engström and written by Jonathan E. Steinberg and Joe Trax, the trio travels by train and tells tales of their family's pasts. Danger in the dining car has Percy, Annabeth, and Grover escaping to a sanctuary where Percy has no other choice but to go skydiving.
You know, kid of a water god in the sky. What could go wrong?
Quite dangerous. And in a very precarious, you know, tall structure.
Yeah.
It's not even just like a regular building.
And one that doesn't seem like it should work, but Annabeth tells us it works. So this episode is the first time where I was watching it and I was like, a little longer. Like 10, 15 minutes longer, because it did feel like it just abruptly ended and the whole St. Louis stuff just happened so quickly. Mm. I was like, just a tiny bit longer, right? Am I the only one feeling that here?
And I think in this episode in particular, there was a lot of learning about our three characters. And so we were listening very intently and the action didn't come until the very end. But it almost felt like maybe that action could have been a little longer.
Well, and I also really liked the action. Mm. And I really liked Echidna and her son. And it's like, I wanted more of it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if in this season we'll get more. I mean, I know Echidna, you know, Percy Jackson, the monsters don't really actually die. It could be a month, a week, years until they come back. But like, I wanted a little bit more. But that's like my only grievance so far. This was the first episode where I was like, that was quick. It was really quick. Little snippet.
Much like our friend Dionysus, we always want more. More wine.
Well, you can't have it though.
More partying.
So the opening of this episode, I loved it. I love these little flashbacks because we don't get this in the books. And having these moments where, one, getting to see Virginia play Sally more, fantastic. But I really liked it because it showed a little bit of Sally's struggle with her kid. Because her kid, Percy, doesn't really seem like he's very strong-willed, right? Mm. He's impertinent. And she's trying to teach him how to swim, which should come naturally.
Right.
And she knows it does. But like, he's very defiant of it. And there's a part where she looks at the other parents and the parent is kind of, one, giving him a side eye, which, come on, they're all kids. But I felt bad for her because she's kind of like, I just want like this normal thing. And it's also very important for you to know.
Right. You know, and I think that's part of Sally's whole journey in raising Percy is that it'll never be normal, you know? And so she always needs to be looking out for him and thinking about how she can prepare him for the future and the things that might come into his life that can be dangerous. Now, I do think it's interesting that Percy does have this aversion to water in this scene. And I was just trying to think of why.
I couldn't tell if it was to the water or to, I don't know, fully trusting it. You know what I mean? Like, it did seem a little odd that like he didn't want to do it. But I mean, did he really have powers back then? Like, would he have been saved?
Right. I mean, I guess in my mind, the child of Poseidon would walk on water always and just be surrounded by a bubble and have, you know, powers. But, you know, maybe for a kid, water is just scary, you know, and just because, I mean, when he's that young, the only thing that really happens for him in regard to him being a demigod is that he sees things that aren't there. So it's not like he always had an affinity for water control. It's like not part of the package deal.
No, not yet. I love what his mother what he tells his mother, reminds his mother, is to just breathe. Which, as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, okay, it's gonna come in later, like, just breathe underwater, Percy. But like, it was very sweet. I'm loving these like very uplifting things that Sally keeps telling him, like, you know, brace yourself, brave the storm, and now like just breathe. It's like she's very motivational.
Yeah. And I think that again is her just planting these little seeds of like, things are going to get harder than this, child.
Well, she tells him outright, like, this is important for you to know how to do this.
Really?
You will die.
Yeah. What I was going to say, really what this scene is showing us is how to be a very patient parent rather than just lifting him up and throwing him in the water.
That's how I learned. My grandfather literally just like threw me into the pool and I'm here. So.
And you can swim.
It works.
We think.
Sure.
Yeah.
I can swim. Yes.
Were you not on the swimming team? I feel like you did everything in high school.
No, I did not join the swimming team. I refused. I was like, no, not for me.
Not for you.
No, I can't breathe underwater. Like, I don't want to do that.
Much like Percy's fears, it seems.
No.
I did, however, have the early 2000s Michelle Branch hit in my head, Breathe. Mm-hmm. I won't sing it because you're rolling your eyes and obviously you don't want to hear it.
I'm not rolling my eyes in that you were going to sing. I'm rolling my eyes that it took like less than 10 minutes for us.
Well, I let the conversation flow a little bit, but I had to bring it up because I love Michelle Branch, but I won't sing it because I cannot hit those notes because it is out of my range.
Know your strengths.
Those notes are not one of them.
Before we leave this flashback / I guess dream sequence sequence with Percy, we get Kronos again saying she is coming, which we know later on is, I'm assuming, talking about Echidna. But why is he warning her? Or is it more of just like playing with his food? You know, it's like she's coming.
Yeah. And so the Furies are from Hades.
Yeah.
Is Echidna not?
All monsters are kind of from the underworld. That's where they go and then reform and then like come back. I'm assuming that Hades does have dominion over all of that, but I don't think he's necessarily in control of every single.
He's not like their ruler.
Right. Exactly. But he can. I don't know. He can send them. I don't know. I have no idea. If you know, let me know.
Maybe he could just call up whoever he right. wants.
So this, a big chunk of this episode takes place in the train, which I really liked because I know from what I remember in the book, the train did not take long. It was more of like they got on the train, they're off. Nothing happens.
They go sightseeing.
Right. And I actually really liked how they structured this episode because when we were rereading it in our episode, we were like, why did they go to the arch? Like, okay, yes, Annabeth loves architecture and she wants to go see it, but like you have a timeline,
you're on a mission,
a deadline, and also you're just on a layover.
Yeah.
You can't do that. So I liked in this, before we get to the thing, it made sense. Yes. Like everything starts on the train.
What the show is doing is it's giving more of a driving force behind the decisions that they make and the actions that they take.
Also for adults to be like, that doesn't make any sense.
Right. Right. Because it would be kind of, especially with Leah Savage-Jeffrey's depiction of Annabeth, for her to kind of just be carefree, being like, hey guys, let's just go to the arch because it's fun.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they could have had an excuse because in this, they talk about how the arch is Athena's temple. Mm. So it could have made sense for her to be like, yeah, let's go ask my mom for help.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have done that, but I liked the extra step of like, they had to get off the train because they're like wanted.
Yeah. You know? And maybe cross country trains going from New Jersey to LA don't actually stop in St. Louis.
I also would not want to do that. Just saying, no way. So one of the first things that we get from our trio in the car, which I loved how they were kind of just set up like a sleepover, like Grover's up top, Annabeth's this way, and Percy's this way. But Percy asks about Thalia.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually really hard for me to like remember how to say her name, Thalia, like that, because I always thought it was just Thalia. I don't know. Whatever.
It's that TH.
Yeah.
We got to stick to it.
So there's a conversation, right? So there's the big three, Hades, Zeus, and Poseidon, and they were forbidden to have kids. And he asks about her because she was the forbidden kid before him, and she just didn't care. So it's kind of like a jab that Annabeth is like, kind of not, I shouldn't say jab, but more of like trying to tell him like she didn't care that she was like a big three kid or a forbidden kid. She was just who she was and she was good at what she did.
Mm-hmm.
Percy doesn't really understand that yet. And I feel like Annabeth is still making him work to let her in. And she does say that. She like clearly he's like, is that what you're doing to me? And she's like, yeah, maybe.
And, you know, it's for Percy, he's just learned all of this stuff about himself. And he's right away been told, well, actually, you're a forbidden kid and it's really bad. So that's really how he's seeing everything of I'm not supposed to be here. Everyone's mad at me. And then when he hears about Thalia, who just was a badass.
Right.
You know, and didn't let those things hold her back. And so he's been told this whole time that you should not exist.
Well, and also that like Annabeth holds her up here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, so if I am like her, why am I not up here with her, with how you feel? And, you know, I am in team Annabeth here where it's like, you, like you said, you don't know anything yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't understand like your role in this and you should. Like you should be more willing to like understand.
It that. Feels like she wants him to earn his stripes.
Which are fair.
You know, prove yourself to me.
Yeah.
Because literally you're just some kid I met about a week ago and now I'm supposed to be taking care of you on this quest. Granted, it's a prophecy which she truly believes in, but she still doesn't know him.
Well, and I think this is where like there's a side where Annabeth is correct and there's a side where Percy is correct. Because in the same conversation, he talks about like how the gods talk to them. And he says, you know, people that you care about, you don't talk to people that way. Mm-hmm. You don't treat them this way. He's right.
Mm-hmm.
But also he doesn't understand that culture. And there's a shot with, it shows Annabeth's face and she kind of is like, I mean, yeah, but like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's nothing you can do. This is just how it is.
Yeah. These are the two sides of the coin that I think that we saw in the last episode where Medusa is saying to her. No, but you don't understand. This is what really happened. And Percy is sees that perspective as well. Whereas again, Annabeth is very, very loyal to her mother and very loyal to the gods. And so it's interesting because they are the same coin. It's just seeing it in a different perspective, you know, and basically for Percy, he's like, well, the example I've had of a parent
is abandonment.
Meaning is Sally.
Oh, is amazing.
Is amazing. Exactly. Yeah. Who has always been there for me, who has taken care of me, who has done whatever she can as a single parent to make sure I'm okay. And then you're telling me that I'm supposed to worship the person that has literally done nothing for me.
Right.
And so he's seen that other side where Annabeth hasn't had that other perspective.
Well, she kind of has, though, only in her story, in the abandonment part, because...
Oh, I meant of the good human parent
taking care of her to compare
it to. So all she knows is, well, my good parent is the parent that I make offerings to.
Right.
That's the one that's taking care of me because my human parent left me.
And that abandons her.
Yeah.
In like 10 minutes.
What a guy.
No, her mother.
That's true. Athena.
But speaking of her backstory, we do learn a little bit. And she kind of talks how like she was a thought from the head and blah, 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 and was given to the dad. And like, it was too much for them. Dad met the stepmom. They have kids. It's too much. Why would you want somebody that has monsters attracted to them? And so she left. And I thought the way they delivered this, you know, her delivery is great. I did think it was quick, right? Because this is a big thing for Annabeth, one, to talk about her backstory. And also, it's kind of one of the more tragic ones, at least initially, that it's like, her mother can't do anything, right? She's not even part of the big three, right? So it's like her mother could be more involved, but she's a god. And her dad just didn't really fight for her. So she had to fight her way to somebody or something, Camp Half-Blood, that would accept her. And it's, I don't know, it's just really heartbreaking because she was 7 when she did that. I mean.
And they say that Luke and Thalia found her.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even like they came to pick her up. It was like she was trying to find a place and they got her.
Yeah.
And so this little 7-year-old was trying to figure out. And at 7 years old, to realize that you've been abandoned and someone else has been chosen over you. I mean, and that's something that's interesting is that I think a lot, I say a lot, oh, well, they're only 12 years old. And it's like, yes, for the situations that they're in, they're only 12 years old. But in a theory that I have is because they are demigods, they see things a little differently.
Right.
They might be actually a little more mature than the other kids around them because they're half god.
Or at least taking a few more seconds to like look at something or like understand something.
Right? Yeah.
Because like what 7-year-old
maturity.
Would, yeah. What 7-year-old would do that, you know?
Peace. Yeah. Bye, Dad.
And actually leave, not just get down the driveway.
Exactly. Hide in the basement.
One of my favorite moments of this episode is when they talk about Grover being froofy. I love it.
Sleepy baby Grover.
He's like, I'm not froofy. You're froofy.
He is a little froofy.
And it's moments like that, though, because it's like we have these conversations that they're having about gods and letting people in and blah, blah, blah. But they can still talk like that to each other. And I just love how Grover is just like sleeping up there. He's like, yeah, whatever. One of the more important things that we do find out is, you know, his uncle Ferdinand was a searcher, was a seeker, looking for Pan. And that's kind of what Grover wants to do, but he hasn't been able to do that.
And, you know, it really kind of begs the question of all of these satyrs who have gone out to look for Pan, who haven't returned. I always sort of thought like,
what happened?
Right. Mm-hmm. They failed. But in reality, is Pan really out there? And these monsters are just stopping them.
Yeah. I mean, this Grover becoming somebody that searches for Pan is like his series purpose. Once we get past this, if you read the books, you'll know that like it goes beyond that. So it takes a little bit for us to really get anything with that. But I do think it's interesting, right? It's like these satyrs work for this thing to hopefully find a thing that they said was dead, but like they know isn't dead, but they have no idea where it is. But they just know that humans are destroying the earth. Like once Pan disappeared, humans are like, I'm going to kill the earth now.
Well, there was nothing to protect it,
right?
There was no barrier between humanity and the natural world. And you really get to see that in this episode with Grover, how the way humans have treated the world is very upsetting to him and to satyrs alike.
It is.
No, absolutely. And I really agree with it. Even, you know, the way that they are seeing these centaurs running freely and how they used to be everywhere, right? Because of humans, they aren't anymore.
And there's only three.
Yeah. And so I was like wondering, like, what do maybe those are buffalo that humans see.
Horses.
Or horses. Cows. And they kill them. And, you know, it's pretty horrific.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, on a less sad note, Echidna.
Yeah, things get real cheery after this.
I love it so far whenever they, like, show a monster coming into the scene. So with the Minotaur and now Echidna, it's like it showed outside the train and then just, like, flying and then going straight into the train.
That was pretty baller.
So cool. Wrecked their cabin, though. So
she did that on purpose.
Well, she did, and she blames it on them. Mm-hmm. So I was really wondering, like, okay, a subplot actually throughout some of the books is like Percy trying to evade the law because he blows stuff up and things happen. And like mortals don't see what he's seeing. They just see like a kid with a bat and like making things blow up. And so I was wondering, are they going to like have the authorities after him? Cause it's like, it is a fun thing, right? And that's why they also have to stay more in hiding. Yes. Now we know. So the cop comes to them and he's like, you know, let me see your tickets or whatever. And it's like, is this your cabin? And it's completely destroyed. And they're like, did you do this? And he's like, how?
Yeah.
How would I have blown a hole through the train? 12-year-olds.
Do you see us? Do you think we have explosives on us? What is happening, sir? But let me tell you, when a very intense white lady in a tweed jacket tells the authority something, apparently they listen.
Mm-hmm.
She is so menacing.
I literally, okay, let me see if I have it in my notes. So Susan Cryer, who plays Echidna, the mother of monsters, love this character in Greek mythology and love her in this book or in this series. But she's terrifying, sickly sweet. Because she's like, just so like, you can't tell at first, like, are you helping me? Like, why do you want to talk to me? And she's just, everything she's saying is just with like kind eyes, but not quite a smile.
It's so menacing. It's and Suzanne Cryer does this so well, where she just, like, you are expecting her to be kind and helpful, but she's so venomous in everything that she's saying. And she's getting such joy out of, like, putting them in this situation. And she's like, oh, these poor little babies. But don't worry.
But then she blames it on them. And it's like, oh, what? Okay, like you're crazy and terrifying, but I really like you. Yeah. I like your look, and I like the way you're delivering these lines, and also the way she was talking to her chimera in the dog carrier. That's exactly what you kind of want from this character, right? And it's like they're talking to her, and she like kind of ignores them to like tend to her child. Mm-hmm. It's just so good.
I like that she's training the chimera with what she thinks is going to be like an easy kill of three child demigods. She's like, don't worry, baby. It'll be easy. You'll track them. It'll be fine.
They're like, see, this is prey.
Yeah.
You'll eat them.
Nom, nom, nom.
Are you hungry? It's so good. I really like the scene of like them trying to get away from them, right? And they're going between cars, and also the police are after them. But the first scene that we get with the chimera, I guess, stinger coming out and hitting Percy immediately. And then you hear Echidna be like, oh, you went a little too fast there. You got ahead of yourself now. Like, you're killing him.
Yeah. He's when poison. That happened, I audibly was like, whoa, was not expecting that at all.
So good. And I love that we get these little shots of what mortals see of what's happening. So like they're on one side of the door. Cops are in another, and something's coming down the thing, and you see this family look out their car door, which, by the way, where are all these trains that have that, where they're like private rooms with, it's like the Harry Potter trains.
Yeah, and the dining car had like a full wall and ceiling of windows.
Where is it?
Gorgina.
But so like, they just see a little chihuahua.
Yes, the little chihuahua.
And it's like, okay, So they're just this chihuahua and everything else around it is breaking. It's just hilarious. I love it.
Yeah.
I love like seeing what the mortals actually see. But this brings us to St. Louis, right? Mm-hmm. And so Percy is now poisoned, which it gets progressively worse through this episode. And Annabeth comes up with the idea of, okay, well, we have Echidna chasing us with her chimera. We're in St. Louis. We'll go to my mother's temple, which is St. Louis Arch.
Yeah.
I love
a feat of architecture.
Yeah. And I love her just geeking out about the architecture. I love that they kept that with the character because she, in the book, she wants to be an architect. She has this affinity for it. And she explains that, you know, her god, her parent, isn't just about like strategy and war. It's also about building and rebuilding. So I like that aspect of her.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I think in this scene, well, these scenes at the arch, we get to see a little more of them. Develop, right? Where we see Annabeth really kind of looking at this place as representing her mother and how much she does love her. And she, you know, really looks up to her. We see Percy's silly side a little bit here and then his heroic side later on. And with Grover, again, we see that affinity for the natural world and looking around at all the stuffed dead taxidermied creatures, how upset he gets.
Yeah.
So we're digging a little bit more into who they are and what makes them who they are.
It's a really interesting episode. Even though it's so short, we do get those moments, right? There's actually some of the conversation before we got here, which I thought was interesting because you brought up the perspective of like, what is Percy's perspective going into this and what is Annabeth's? And I liked what Echidna was doing and when she was talking to them and her chimera, and she was pretty much saying like, oh, you think we're the monsters? You don't think you're the monster here? You don't think that you're the burden of your parents' mistake? Like, who's going to be killing who here?
Like, first of all, how dare you?
Well, I like that thought, even though like, I don't necessarily, I think she's wrong mostly, right? But I do think it's interesting because they didn't choose to be demigods. Most of the monsters didn't choose to be monsters. I think it's an interesting thought and I'm curious if it's going to actually be explored later.
Well, I think, you know, there's always that thought of when you're looking at it from a particular perspective, they're the main character of their story.
Yeah.
They're the one that is doing right.
The Echidna story.
Exactly. that is the spinoff series that we need.
I'd read it.
But it's a sitcom about a mom who has too many babies.
Oh my God.
Go get your little sister. Her poison dots are running out.
Then to your point, we do get to see all three of them kind of play to their strengths or act kind of how they're going to act as a unit, right? It's like Grover is very sensitive to the natural world and Annabeth's trying to think with her head and be smart about it. And Percy is doing impersonations of her mother.
I really do hope that she's British because Percy gave her a little British accent and I really love it.
What did he say? He said something of like, I'll be down in a second. I'm just in the potty.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was like
so stupid.
So funny. But I love he drops, right? So the poison is finally gone from his system. He drops. So then what do? They drag him outside. They put him in a fountain and they're just like splashing him.
Like he's a beach whale.
Exactly. Like, and people are walking by and it's like, oh boy.
It's one of the funniest scenes so far. But I also like Annabeth being Annabeth. And she was like, it's not working. Does it have to be running water? Like what?
Dunk his head more.
Yeah. And I'm probably right because that fountain water is just recycled. So yeah. Like
it must be natural.
Yeah.
Lake, sea.
The ocean.
Rivers.
But I do think it was smart on their part, you know. Okay, so now we're getting to again their godly parents being assholes. Echidna is able to come into the supposed temple of Athena. Why? Because Percy, being impertinent, sent Medusa's head to Olympus, and now Athena is embarrassed. Just like she made Medusa, because she embarrassed her in her temple.
So she's like, I don't care if my daughter dies. I'm embarrassed.
I mean, like...
They need to get over themselves.
Yeah. It's rude, right? It's like, so you're going to let all of them die? Like, would it... What is your plan here?
Yeah, maybe for Athena, because babies just pop out of her face or whatever. Like, it's not that big of a deal. She's like, I could replace her. It doesn't matter.
I mean, true.
Right?
It is really messed up, though. And like, it makes me think, like, how... So, like, Ares gave Clarice the spear. Annabeth has the invisible cap from her mother. It's like, how did she get that from her mother? Was it, like, because she got to camp and she approved of her or whatever? And it's like, but now you're just going to, like, cut her off. Which is, I'm very interested to see, like, how far this is going to go, right? It's like, how much is she not going to be able to rely on her mother?
Yeah.
And is she going to have to do something to get back into her good graces?
Yeah. I mean, the package didn't say best wishes, Percy, Annabeth, and Grover.
They all know they're with them, though.
You know what, though? These, they're so sensitive.
It said best wishes, Percy Jackson. Also, Annabeth is right here.
And my two best friends who also made this decision, Annabeth and Grover.
So Percy fully poisoned. Percy's very, very poisoned here. They get to the top of the arch, which I've been there. I don't remember those elevators.
Pods of some sort.
Don't remember them at all. Those child size elevators could be there. Don't remember those. I wanted there to be almost a bigger fight.
Mm.
Like, I know that, like, some of the bigger stuff happens later on, but the entrance of this chimera is so cool. I love the design of it because you can tell it's just, like, young, but also, like, ancient at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I just love, like, the scales going into the fur and then going into the,
it was incredible.
So, so cool. I wish there was a little more, right? So it's like,
I agree.
He doesn't do much. He kind of gets like one or two slashes in him. I guess to be fair, he's been at camp for like 2 days.
Yeah. It's interesting because the fantastical part of me is like, this should have been a really fun battle. Right. The very real part of me is like, well, if we remember at camp, he sucked. So
he's good at sword fighting.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be good in this situation, especially if he's poisoned as well. It's like, so I guess it makes sense that it just kind of all falls apart.
Right.
But I agree. I wish there was a little more meat to the fight.
We also do get to see Percy's like fatal flaw in this scene as well, because Annabeth is like being the rational person and saying, go get him somewhere to help because my mother can't help. I will try to do this, which she survived when she was 7, got all the way to Camp Half-Blood and has been training ever since. I would trust her.
Yeah, she's fantastic with the dagger and she has her invisibility hat.
Yeah.
She has better chances than Poison Percy.
And Percy doing the smoothest transition from being helpless to like, oh, here, take my sword. Whoop. Switches, puts his two friends out there. And that's his fatal flaw, is just being so loyal and doing anything, especially for these two. I thought it was real smooth. And I was like, that's Percy. Yeah. That is Percy. You shouldn't have done it, but that's Percy.
Right. Definitely. And, you know, it really was a slick moment. And he knows that this is his quest and he doesn't want anyone else to take the fall during it other than himself. A difference here from the book is I felt like in the book, once there is that gash in the arch,
the hole.
Yeah. He, in the book, deliberately jumps out as a way of escape. But here, again, that very sort of real depiction of this is a 12-year-old kid who has absolutely no training. Yeah, he would get knocked out of it and he would be holding on and then fall. Like,
yeah,
yes, that makes absolute sense.
I think both of them were fantastic. I like the one in the book because we get him kind of for the first time reaching out to his father.
Mm.
And like praying to him and being like, please, like, just don't make this suck. Like, let this help, you know? And I also like in the book how it's like they're directly over the water somehow.
Yes.
It's not how this works. Like, the arch is not over water. I like how in the show it shows it's nowhere near the water. So when he's hanging on, I was like, wait, like how is he going to like do this? Like, is he going to like
I kept thinking,
flying squirrel it?
Yeah, like, I was like, did he put the Maya shoes on? Like, did that happen? Nope.
No, he didn't.
No.
And just like a thing of water comes and grabs him and puts it, that makes sense.
Yep.
Of course it was that. Mm-hmm. But the whole scene of him like falling, how it was in like first person, it looked really intense. Yeah. I mean, from superhero movies, right? It's like we've seen tons of people fall and having that point of view. This was really well done.
Yeah.
Like I liked the way it felt and looked. It seemed like they kind of just dropped a GoPro. And just like
I think what also
on Walker's chest and then pushed
they really out. Did that to him. They really did. I think what also added to the intensity of this was the fact that like we didn't know that the water was going mm-hmm. to come and grab him. So there were those few seconds of going, wait a minute. How is Percy going to survive this? How is he going to get out of this?
Yeah.
So it really did make it a very like wild scene to watch as a viewer wondering how it was going to end up.
He ends up in the water.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that.
The dirty water.
How? We didn't know, but he got in there.
He got in there.
And then we get the first look at the water spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't really see her.
No, she's in the back. It's murky.
Well, it's also disgusting.
Yeah.
In there. It's like gross. But the callback from the beginning of the episode of Just Breathe comes back and he's able to breathe underwater.
Yay.
Yay. But I do like what she says. And again, this is like a theme throughout the series and it's going to be a conflict with Percy and his father of like all of these things saying you should just trust your father. You should just pray to him. You should whatever. And he's like, how can I do that when one, my mother's gone and in the underworld, and also he's never come to see me. How am I supposed to do this?
Right.
And then the spirit tells him, your father is here. He's always been here. He's very proud. Trust him. Trust in yourself. It's like, okay, get an affirmation, water spirit. I love that.
We all need that in our lives, right? We just need that little water spirit come tell us to believe in ourselves.
Yeah. I couldn't tell though, like, was that Virginia Kroll's voice?
Oh, interesting.
I want to say, we have to wait to watch it again, but you guys let me know. Comment below. Just like, was that Virginia's voice?
Who's that at?
Because I know in the book, it's like he thinks it is his mother, right? And I don't know if that's just him being woozy, but I'm curious if it was her voice to make it seem like it was his mother.
Comforting.
Mm-hmm. And that's how the episode ends.
Yeah.
It's quick. A lot. It's quick.
Yeah. And so we have four episodes now to get to LA and then back to New York eventually. So there's a lot of literal ground to cover. There's a lot of country to cover.
Mm-hmm. How are they going to get there?
I don't know.
But they're in St. Louis.
The next episode, is that when we meet Ares?
Ooh, I would think so, right? Because like we're still waiting and this is just going off of stuff in the trailer, right? So we're not going to spoil anything. Still waiting to see the fates.
Mm-hmm.
Ares does show up, so they have to get to a diner at some point. Mm-hmm. I want to say the next episode is that. I want to say it's Waterworld, which is the Tunnel of Love.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you figure next episode's Colorado. The episode after that is Las Vegas. The episode after that is Los Angeles. And then the last episode is New York.
That's a lot. I feel like, that's a lot because there's like multiple there's like stuff that happens in Santa Monica. Multiple things.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then the last episode is him. Well, we won't get whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, if you listen to this, I'm very excited. I think just going forward, since we haven't seen anything else, right? So we're just speculating now and we're just like, we're in it. My thing I'm looking forward to the most is Krusty's waterbed palace.
Yeah.
You will understand what that means when we get to it if you don't know what I'm saying.
I am very.
Because we have yet to see it, even in the movies.
That's very true. It would be a tragedy if it was not included in the series.
I think it is. I feel like I saw something. Rick or somebody that worked on the show was like, "It's Krusty is there." And I'm like, "Thank God!" It's so bizarre.
It's so bizarre.
I want it.
I'm really looking forward to the casino.
Mm.
I'm really looking because I think that is going to look amazing. And I think we're going to spend a little more time there than we do in the books.
There is one thing that I'm going to try to keep an ear out. And I want you guys to do this too. So if you find it and we don't find it, whatever, in the casino, if they mention two kids with the last name D'Angelo, let me know. That's the thing I'm most excited for in that casino, right? And also to see like how they do the games.
Yeah.
Fun.
Will Annabeth just be playing The Sims?
I hope basically. So. Just Sim City.
Yes, exactly. Roller Coaster Tycoon. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let us know what you're feeling about the series so far. We're halfway done. We like to do these halfway point check-ins, right? It's like, are we enjoying it?
Yes.
If not, we're still going to cover it.
We can't turn back now.
We can't turn back. Okay. Until next week.
Yeah. See you on the road.
Also, Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. Happy 2024, friends.
Wow.
Here we go again.
I can always forget about holidays when we do this. I feel like it's an escape from the real world. So I'm like, I don't see anything.
Time doesn't matter in here. It just is. You know, things like we've talked about something that isn't really out to the world yet, which is going to be posted. It's wild.
It's bananas.
Yeah.
All right. Well, goodbye.
Goodbye.